Welcome to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pamela and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Harshman Travel Radio Show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. You might have a chance of working with them in their business ventures and your travel plan. So listen in and enjoy the journey. Now on to our Building Fortunes Radio Show with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingle. Let's get started, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's a Friday night. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Friday we do either a live or a replay, almost always live, with the Harshman Travel Radio Show. If you go to harshmantravel.com, you'll see a cool website, but it's really kind of important to me that you learn the people behind the product as well. And the way this got started was I was looking for a way to be able to showcase and highlight people doing the right things. You know, the good eggs, you know, the entrepreneurs that are doing things the right way. This way, you, at least you meet these people because they can make a big difference in your life. And I asked Pam Harshman to be a guest on our radio show as she was building a home-based business at that time. And she told me that, you know, Peter, we're going to be moving in a different direction. And you could almost hear Pam saying that, like, gently letting me down, like, well, like, thank you very much, but we're going to be moving somewhere else. And I said, oh, where are you going to be moving to? Moving meaning like in the directions. And she says, well, we're going to become traditional travel agents. And I said, oh, that'll be a good thing for people that are in the travel industry because you're really good at what you do. And I know you're going to bring your head with you wherever you go. And so I started to think a little bit, you know, like Winnie the Pooh, like, think. And he just said, you know, people that do home-based businesses are people too. So let's have you as like the official, if you will, the Building Fortunes Radio Travel Agency Company, you know, or whatever that might be. I know that if people book their stuff with you, you'll still give them the service they deserve, you know, the best deals on the planet. You'll be able to help them answer the questions they didn't even think about asking. And when it comes to travel, usually when you're doing some stuff like this, it's not just, you know, a business trip. It might be something you're planning on for super-duper long time. So you need some really great help. And you definitely want the people that you call when you need help to remember who you are, you know, as opposed to calling these online marketing and you're going to talk to somebody else from a foreign country. And if they have chickens in their background, they're from the Philippines. But if you're calling Pam and you're hearing chickens, that's just the farm that she lives on. So anyway, that's a good thing. So anyway, so we are here talking about whatever we're going to talk about. But I wanted you guys to have the level of confidence that I have in them. So we do introductions first. And I know that we just finished a presidential debate, so I won't say anything, but I'll just kind of carry the theme of the TDS, you know, the Trump derangement syndrome, and just to share with people, I think I have DDS, so DDS, like date derangement syndrome. I can't believe we're halfway through the year already. I can't believe it. Like, there's something seriously wrong. Like, we're gonna be talking about snow and holidays pretty soon and all that sort of stuff, and I can't believe it. So I have DDS. So having said that, Pam Harshman, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Thanks, Peter, and you had me wondering about the DDS. I'm sitting here running
every
possible scenario through my head, what it could be. And that was not one of the scenarios. Anyway,
I'd like to.
A little bit about my back. Is I started my working years as a 911 dispatcher up in the Pacific Northwest. Did that for a long time and slow but sure worked myself up into court administration. Loved my job and spent many years doing that as well. And then I met my husband and moved clear across the country down into sunny Florida to be with him. And once down here, I did not want to start at the bottom of the ladder or anywhere close. So I wanted to try and find something that I could do that I could work pretty much independently and hopefully from home. So I ended up getting my realtor's license followed by my broker's license, and I sold real estate in South Florida for several years, but that just wasn't my niche. And so I went and got my life and health insurance license and sold Medicare supplements to the senior population. I absolutely loved it. I loved going out and visiting with the seniors. And at the same time, it was very rewarding for me because there was so much stuff on the TV, you know, with the Joe Namath celebrity types with pushing some kind of insurance, and they get all this stuff in the mail. And in my opinion, what they do with their health care is probably the most important decision they'll make for the rest of their life once they hit Medicare age. So it was fulfilling for me to be able to sit down and explain and answer questions for them. And at the same time, it was also very fun because I never knew what I was going to be walking into when I went to their homes. I had one time I went and a bunch of ladies were around a table and it was almost like a full-blown tea party. And other times they'd be in plain bunco and everybody stopped and I went through my question and answer spiel and we went from there. Other times it might have just been one person or a couple. So it was always fun not knowing what I was going to walk into, and it was kind of a surprise. But one day in my travels, I received a phone call from a girlfriend of mine who, out of the blue, asked if Ron and I ever thought about becoming travel agents. And it blew me away because it hadn't been even a week since Ron and I were sitting down yakking about our bucket lists. And, you know, we were baby boomer empty nesters, and we had some disposable income, and we were both in a position to make our own work schedule. So we were trying to figure out where we wanted to go first and prioritize everything, and so it was kind of a surprise when she asked me that. I could not wait to get home and talk to Ron about it. And once we were going through all the pros and cons and checking things out on the internet, we decided to move forward. And from there, it just kind of developed. And we have probably done a whole lot of extra traveling that we normally would not have been able to do. And at the same time, we have helped an awful lot of people spread their travel dollars and find them discounts and all that good stuff at the same time. But that was until COVID hit, and that kind of put the quabash on everything travel-oriented across the whole world. And we're recovering from that, but things are going full steam ahead now, and the whole industry is bigger and better than it ever was, and so we're thrilled.
Excellent. Okay, good. And Ron, over to you.
Hey, thanks, Peter. Good to be with you again. My background is very different from Pam's. Spent a good number of years being a licensed clinical psychologist, very involved, obviously, in my own clinical practice, but also chose to get involved in more of the self-regulatory aspect of the profession. When I first got started, a good friend of mine, a mentor, suggested that she thought it would be a wise move for me to get involved in the professional aspects of the actual profession and get involved in the provincial association and serve on the board of directors, etc. And I followed that advice and initially did get involved in the Provincial Association, sat on the board of directors, on the Ethics Committee, and Professional Affairs Committees, etc. And after a few years doing that, I reached out and also got involved in the National Association, the Canadian Psychological Association. I was very honored with my involvement there to be elected as chair of the Applied Division, and as a result, again, sat on the Board of Directors, Ethics Committees, Government Relations Committees, etc., and really saw a lot of the profession, the behind-the-scenes aspects that very few professionals choose to get involved with. Most professionals, regardless of their profession, will join the National Association, perhaps go to an annual convention, but that's usually the extent to which they get involved. So very, very few professionals in any profession really get to see a lot of what goes on behind the scenes in terms of the actual day-to-day running, the deals that you have to be involved with when fellow professionals choose to do things unethical, and you get involved in ethics committees and then the whole intergovernment relations type of thing. So it was very, very instructive, very rewarding, and I felt very good about my involvement there. At the end of my career, I was also very much honored to be elected as a lifelong honorary fellow of the Canadian Association. So it was a good involvement. I feel that I was able to contribute and have some impact, and really enjoyed my years doing that. In terms of my own clinical work, I, in both my undergraduate and graduate years, was fortunate enough to have a number of professors who really stressed the point that if we were even thinking about going into private practice at any point in the future, it would be important for us to first gain as much varied clinical experience as we could, working with different clinical populations, seeing different aspects of life challenges, etc., because they made the point very strongly that when you're in private practice, you have very little control over who's going to call you to make an appointment, to come in and see you, and looking for assistance and direction in terms of their life problems and challenges. And if you have no idea of the kinds of things that they are talking about or what they're going through, you can really end up doing a lot more harm than good. So I took that advice very much to heart, and spent a good number of years through my entire educational process and after graduation even, working for pretty much every one of the social service delivery systems. So by the time I did go into private practice, I felt very well prepared, and really there wasn't going to be very many life situations that I had not been involved in terms of dealing with patients in, you know, government or institutional work. So I ended up at the after being in clinical practice for a while, ended up doing a lot of work with young couples going through divorce and being involved in child custody disputes. It was very, very heavy work. I was one of the first psychologists in Canada to be appointed by the Supreme Court as an expert in child custody, and really spent a lot of time and a lot of effort, obviously, being involved in developing new standardized ways of evaluating what was going to be in the best interests of the children in these disputed custody actions. Up until the time that I got involved, it had pretty much been a pre-drawn conclusion, both in the Canadian and the American courts, that if you had a young couple going through a divorce and there were young children involved, in many, many cases, the courts would approve custody to mommy and visitation to daddy. And although that was a sensible way to go, and it was a okay outcome situation in many, many of the cases before the courts, we started seeing too many cases where it not only was not a good outcome, but it was a very negative and destructive outcome. And as a result of that, the judicial system itself started moving away from that, and the courts took the position that going forward, no longer would there be this pre-drawn conclusion, but any decision that was made with respect to child custody and access had to be based on the psychological best interests of the children involved. And that was a very, very smart move. It was a very good move. And I was very fortunate to be involved at the time that that was happening. And as a result, ended up being in the forefront of a number of practitioners, both clinical social workers and clinical psychologists, who got together, and we worked on setting up a standardized approach to child custody investigation. So it was very, very heavy work, very rewarding work. Ended up, as I say, being one of the first psychologists in Canada to be involved in that work. And later on in my career, ended up in South Florida and ended up being the first psychologist in both the Dade and Broward County court systems to be recognized as an expert in child custody, and got the whole program set up on how to do child custody investigations, make decisions about the psychological best interests of the children involved, and also how to go into court and present that information. So it was, as I say, very challenging work, very heavy work, but very, very rewarding work. After Pam and I were involved for a relatively short period of time, we decided to move from Southeast Florida over to Southwest Florida. We started raising alpacas. Pam started getting involved in multi-level marketing, home-based businesses, and although I was not involved in that, I was fully supportive of her doing it, but when she came home and said she really wanted us to talk about the possibility of becoming professional travel consultants, it was just an approach that really hit both of us as something that we really wanted to do. We decided if we were going to do it, we would do it the right way. We would get the proper training necessary and obviously all of the proper licensures, etc. But we also made the commitment that we would take the time and the energy to find those travel vendors that we felt comfortable working with and supporting, because as with any other industry, you know, you have a lot of vendors that are doing things, in my opinion, the right way, but also, unfortunately, there's many that are doing things the wrong way, and we wanted to be sure that when we recommended any travel vendor, whether it was a cruise line, a resort, or whatever, that we knew that the client was going to be well taken care of and get good value for their money. So it worked out very, very well for us. We did an awful lot more travel than we ever would have been able to had we not become travel consultants. And COVID certainly put a kibosh on things, but we maintained a very optimistic feeling about how things would eventually work out. And as you recall, we spent many hours talking about our prognostications of what was going on, what was going to be happening. And it's been a real pleasure these last several months now to be able to talk about things going on in the industry that really demonstrate that our prognostications were dead on correct, and things are certainly happening in the travel industry that are making things much better than they ever were before, and in particular the cruise industry has come back much bigger and stronger than ever before, and it continues to grow and add things that are just making the world of travel one that has so much to offer anybody who's able to venture into it.
Excellent. So we're going to take a little quick commercial break. You're listening to Ron Harshman, and he's going to be giving us the updates on what's happening right after we're finished.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device connected to the Internet by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Listen in often and get to know Pam and Ron. Go to the buildingfortunesradio.com website to listen in to the show. No matter where you're at in life, you can benefit by listening to and by working with Pam and Ron. Let them book your next cruise, vacation getaway, or group event. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio and witness their ability to pursue their dreams in the field they love. Thanks for listening. And now, back to the Harshman Travel Radio Show.
And we are back. Check out harshmantravel.com, harshmantravel.com, and Ron's going to give us the new news on what's happening in the travel industry. So over to you, Ron.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot. A lot of good things coming out this week from various places and different kinds of news releases, but I'm just going to go through a number of them because they continue to just demonstrate how the cruise industry in particular, the travel industry generally, has just come back from what was going on during COVID in such a substantial way. And we're seeing things today that during the beginning and right through almost to the end of the COVID experience, would have been just thought impossible for things to ever be able to recover the way they have. But a number of interesting things. Carnival Cruise Corporation, for example, came out this week with a statement that the Port of Seattle Commission approved a 10-year preferential berthing agreement with Carnival Corp, as well as a five-year possible extension. And this during this 10-year period, they have agreed to work together, and they're talking about bringing in an anticipated $186 million in revenue and a minimum 550,000 revenue passengers annually, and that revenue would go over the 10 years, and it could grow to $273 million if extended to the full 15 years. Carnival has been operating out of Seattle for almost 20 years, and obviously they've developed a very strong relationship with that port, and it's mutual, of course. And Carnival has agreed to do a number of things. They are going to be promoting Seattle in terms of offering different opportunities for passengers to spend time in Seattle, both before their cruise or, after their cruise. They're also going to be involved in developing educational workforce development for maritime nonprofits. They're working with different educational system contacts and developing programs for people interested in going into the industry. And they are obviously going to be able to provide the port with all kinds of data of track passengers that will, be able to track passengers, environmental, economic impact metrics, etc. And in 2023, Carnival Corporation Brands brought 140 ship calls to Seattle, representing almost half of the port's cruise calls. In 2024, Carnival Corp has six ships committed to the Seattle market, and that will be growing to seven ships in 2025. So for them to enter into a 10-year, possible 15-year contractual arrangement is just, again, an indication of how the cruise industry impacts any of the ports of call where they operate, and they become a major participant in the economy, and working not only with the port, but with vendors in that area, etc. So, again, very nice to see the length of commitment that these different cruise lines are making with the different ports of call. I've reported on a number of these things over the past several weeks, and we're going to continue seeing more and more of them. Carnival Corp. also made an announcement this week that I thought was interesting, made two important announcements. One was that they will definitely not be moving into the riverboat or river cruise industry. They made the decision that the river cruise industry is very, very niche operated, very small, and for them to get involved would just really take away from where they see their major growth going. So it was interesting to see their decisions that are coming out, the decisions, for example, to move some of the ships from one of the subsidiaries to another subsidiary have really been impactful. We've seen that with Costa cruise ships going over to Carnival, and a number of other moves, P&O going over to Carnival in Australia. And it's just interesting that the growth pattern of particularly Carnival Corp. has just been phenomenal. They certainly are the main leader in the industry, and everything that they do is just seemingly done in order to promote and maintain that position. They also came up with another important announcement this week. I'd talked before about Carnival Corp adding SpaceX's Starlink to all of their different subsidiaries, and having done that, now that move has now been completed. They really are announcing how good a move it has been. The quality of onboard Wi-Fi service is very much equal to what's available on land. They are spending more on bandwidth than they ever have before, but they're finding that it is money well spent. It's revenue producing. Customers are extremely happy to have that level of connectivity while they're on ships. And as they announced before, when we talked about them looking at adding Starlink, they have really found that their crew members are especially pleased, because coming from different countries across the world, having the ability to get online and communicate with family members while they're on long periods of time on board ship has really been a very positive add for the crew members, and that has really turned out to be a very major thing there as well. And all of the brands now, all of the Carnival Corp brands have Starlink, and they have all experienced very, very positive reactions from their own, as I say, crew members and customers, passengers. So that's been an interesting add-on from their perspective, and they are finding that the money that they're investing there is certainly money that is well spent. Disney Cruise Line came up with an announcement that they are going to be going to Asia in 2025, and they will be offering 3- and 4-night voyages departing from Singapore's marina, and they have again a collaboration between Disney Cruise Line and the Singapore Tourist Board. Disney is going to be in Asia. This is the first time that they are there, and they are expecting a very, very positive reception. So that's looking good. They also announced that they have confirmed plans to operate a third season in Australia and New Zealand in 25-26. And during the third season, they will be offering 3- to 5-night voyages from Sydney and Auckland, and then repositioning to the West Coast and coming out of San Diego after that. But again, seeing the number of moves really worldwide that the cruise industry is involved in, it's just remarkable to see the impact and the extent of the impact, as I've said before, worldwide, just so much bigger and stronger than just here in the North American continent. Princess Cruises, for those of you who are old enough, like me, to remember the old Princess, you know, what's the name of it now? I'm old enough to remember it, but can't remember the Love Boat. The Love Boat. They announced. I was looking at that. I've got two things on Princess, and I was looking at one, meaning to talk about the other. Anyhow, excuse me. But Princess Cruises announced that they are putting together what they're calling a VIP package for a second Love Boat themed cruise, and they are going to have the original cast on the ship. This is going to be in Canada and New England later this summer, and it's going to really be a what's the right way to put it, but a memory striking event for those people who weekly couldn't wait to see Doc and Gopher and Isaac and all the different crew participants there. This VIP package will have an exclusive cast cocktail party. There will be reserved seating in the Q&A in the Princess Theater to talk with the cast members and get some, up close and personal questions about them and their personal lives, etc. There'll be front of line access for the cast meet and greet, and plenty of opportunity for personal photos and autographs. There will be dinner with the cast, Love Boat T-shirt and mug, and a signed cast photo. So those people who might have an interest, is something that is coming up fairly soon. It's going to be the end of August into September. They will be going from New York City. They will go to Boston, Eastport, Maine, St. John, and Halifax in Canada. And as they say, it's they've done it before. I don't remember how long ago they did it, but I remember them running meet the real staff and have your own Love Boat experience once before, and it obviously was a good success, and they're doing it again. So anybody who's interested, give us a call. Princess Cruises also came up with an interesting plan for your 2025 and 2026 for those itineraries. They are giving guests the opportunity to secure the lowest cruise fares available. And the way they're going to run this is that they are telling any passengers who book on specific cruises, specific itineraries during period of time that this is going to be running. But what they're saying is that if they find another ship that they can get the same accommodation as they're getting on the Princess cruise, they will, if they get that other lower price before their final payment due date, when they notify Princess of the lower fare, they will not only get that fare, but they will get 20% off of that fare when they make their final payment. And they're saying that this is their better than best price guarantee. So this is something that is coming up, and it's just an interesting approach. But again, giving people good value for their investment. Crystal is a luxury cruise line. They just contracted with Fincantieri Shipyard to build two new ocean ships, and those ships will be coming on board 28-29, and again, just really showing how there are so many of these cruise companies that are continuing to grow and expand, and adding new ships, adding new berths, and really everybody, every one of the cruise lines is anticipating significant growth over the next several years. MSC Cruises, we've talked before about how they've really been expanding in the North American market, and they just announced that they will be having seven ships in the United States for the winter 25-26 season, and that will be the highest number of ships that they have ever had here. And again, just the way in which they are becoming certainly one of the top cruise lines operating here. Last thing I want to talk about is the Port of Tampa Bay to not be left out. We've talked about changes in Jacksonville, talked about changes in Miami and in Fort Lauderdale. The Port of Tampa Bay is putting together a project to build a fourth cruise terminal, and this will be an $80 million investment, and their board unanimously approved a going forward motion with this plan, and they are operating with several different cruise lines: Royal Caribbean, Carnival, Norwegian, and Celebrity Cruises. All have a number of itineraries going out of Tampa, and they are feeling very confident that a fourth cruise terminal will be supported, and we'll be able to really expand the position that Port of Tampa has in the Florida market. So we're seeing some major expansion. I think that the differences that are coming about with particularly
all of the main brands, the MSC, Royal Caribbean, Norwegian, and Carnival Corp. Those are the four big players here, and every one of them is continuing to grow, expand the number of ships, the number of itineraries, and they're also starting to really diversify in terms of the number of different types of itineraries that they are offering. We're really seeing some movement in terms of new emphasis, particularly on shorter cruises, but also on longer ones. So we are starting to see a lot more 3- and 4-night cruises and 10- and 14-night cruises. So as I've said many, many times, we are continuing to see a major growth in the passenger arena, and we're seeing many, many, many brand new participants in the cruise marketplace. Obviously, the people who have been cruising for years are very much coming back full force, and I believe that we're still seeing a number of people who are trying to make up for what they feel was, they were deprived of during the COVID experience. We're still seeing people saying, I'm still making up for the cruises I missed. But at the same time, we are also seeing a significant number of people who have never cruised before and have just been made aware of the whole opportunity in cruising. And as we've talked before many, many times, Peter, we still are very firm believers that there is nothing, no vacation experience that can compare in terms of value and just the ease of enjoyment to the cruise industry. The number of different ways in which people are enjoying cruising and feeling that they are really, really getting their money, their money's value. So, lots of good things happening. As I said, the thing with that Princess, their new guarantee, lowest price, find something cheaper, they will match it. Is one of the things that we're seeing. We are also certainly still seeing a number of very, very attractive money-saving offers from the various cruise lines for cruises anywhere in the future. And I've said it before, I'll say it again, that any thought that cruise might be in your future, it's very, very smart to go ahead and make a booking, pay a small deposit. If you are able to make the trip, you have bought yourself a very good money-saving value, and if for any reason things unfortunately turn and you're not able to make the trip, as long as you make that decision prior to your final payment due date, everything that you've put up is 100% refundable, so it's really nothing lost to go ahead and make a booking if you are at all contemplating that the there's a possibility you'll be able to enjoy a cruise vacation.
Well, great information. So lots of expansion in the cruise industry. This is the time to buy. And is it too early to start booking for, like, December holidays? Or is it like you better hurry up before they fill up?
Well, and there's a lot of availability, so I don't want to say, you know, hurry up before they sell out. I think we're a ways away from there. But certainly to be able to take advantage of some very good offers right now, the holidays are not that far away. I mean, as you've complained last week, you know, we're already halfway through the year. So
Christmas is coming.
You know, we're up on 4th of July already, and we've got so many things falling right after that and right up through into Christmas and New Year's and, you know, all of those things. All those holidays in around that time to really make plans and find out what's available and be able to choose from a number of options is always a good idea. And it's certainly not too early to do it, and I think that the number of money saving offers that are there will certainly go down in number as we get closer to the holidays. I mean, sometimes get to the point where they see good activity and good opportunity to sell out, they start pulling some of these great offers.
Well, okay, good. So we're going to see everybody next week. I guess this will be right after 4th of July, so everybody have a safe and happy 4th of July. Celebrate whatever you're going to celebrate, and we're going to be ready next week on Building Fortunes Radio. Go check them out, harshmantravel.com, harshmantravel.com. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Ron. Thanks,
Pam. Okay, have a good week.
Safe holidays.
Welcome.
You've been listening to the Harshman Travel Radio Show segment on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear previous radio shows with Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Meagle. Pam and Ron's success as entrepreneurs has allowed them to pursue their passion in the travel industry. Listen to Harshman Travel Radio Show and learn about Pam and Ron as they discover the joy that comes from being part of the travel industry. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Pam and Ron Harshman and Peter Mingles and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.